Excellent Movie Adventures!
With me, Thomas, and my co-host, Pickle and Zach.
Sha-sha-sha!
Oh, you call me by my real name.
I'm feeling really gracious today.
I don't know whether to be scared or appreciative.
That's all good.
We'll wait and see how you feel by the end of this episode. Yeah.
I didn't choose the movie, so we're going off on Thomas tonight.
Bring it. He's got nothing, just quiet.
I got nothing.
You guys watch anything good this week?
I watched some stuff. I watched I watched just the songs from The Night Before Christmas with Lulu. She doesn't not care
the,
for...
So you watched 75% of the movie, yeah. I Hate You.
So I like that movie. I love that movie, actually. Yes. But Lulu didn't care for the... She likes the songs. She doesn't care for in between the songs. So yeah. I have to fast forward those parts. And I also watched the Ichabod Crane.
I love that one.
Like we talked about in the last episode.
Yeah.
I watched that with Falco and Lizzie, yeah. And it was awesome.
Yeah. I was going to watch that on Sunday, but then Jackson had his little buddy come over and
On Disney Plus, it's on there as a split movie. So you have to fast forward through Adventures of Mr. Toad.
The Wind in the Willows.
That's what it is. Okay. It's just not called that. Okay. But that's what the story is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess, that's the first movie, and then you got to go to the
They're both
one.
Good. I'm good just saying, know. Like.
Wind in the Willows is really weird, though. It's like Walt Disney on meth almost at some points.
Yeah,
it is. And it's funny too. They have a ride at Disneyland for it.
Okay.
And you start out and you're doing the car chase. It's the car chase or whatever. Sure. So you're going through everything. And then the end of it, it's basically Satan as the judge or whatever. And he's like, I sentence you to hell. And then you drive into hell. That's the end of the ride.
Sounds like a fun child ride.
It is. It's, yeah, it can be a little weird.
Yeah, that's so weird. There's this, basically Mr. Toad he has this fortune. He's like a rich guy. It's like he inherited a bunch of money.
Like, yeah, from his grandpa or something.
Yeah, yeah. And so he's this like young rich guy with like nothing, no job, nothing tying him down. He's just spending money wherever he can spend it. Because he has so much of it, right?
Yeah.
Can't get rid of it fast enough. And he buys a horse and buggy because that's like the main way to get around at the time.
Yeah.
And then these weasels drive by in a car, a motorcar, he calls it. And he sees it.
Those
and
will is never in, last.
He's just infatuated with it. Like, he needs a motor car. So he buys it off the weasels and he signs over the deed to Toad Hall, which is his house.
That's right.
Is leverage for the car. Yeah. And anyway, basically they report the car stolen. Or the car was stolen.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they stole it and then they sold it to him for the title to Toad Hall. And then he goes to jail for it because he's driving a stolen vehicle. And the judge on his case is in on it.
That's right.
Yeah. So, and the judge is a human. Every other character in the show
is an animal.
Yeah, I think the police officers are also
humans. Yeah, the police officers, I believe, are humans.
So the judge
as well.
And the cops are humans. Hmm. Every other character is an animal. And they all just converse with the humans like it's no big deal.
So but it the happens toad, when yeah. you're on meth.
And like everything is like off scale wise. Like the toad, like he hides under a bridge to like escape at night when he's like breaking out of prison. But when he's arrested, he's the same size as the cops. But then he's like small enough to hide under that bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Like the scaling is just all over the place. Like he's big enough to drive a motor car.
Yeah.
But he's also a toad. So he's like, you could hold him in your hand.
Pick a scale and stick with it.
His best friend is the horse.
Uh huh.
That's attached to his buggy that he bought. Uh-huh. And the horse is like massive compared to him.
Yeah.
But he fits just fine in the horse and buggy.
Yeah. Nothing like having your best friend be your slave.
It's a weird one. It's a weird movie.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good though. I would recommend people watch it.
It is.
How do you feel about Space Mountain getting renamed? Speaking of Disneyland,
I think it's a crock of crap.
Well, why'd they rename it?
So basically, Space Mountain is after Song of the South.
Oh, okay.
Which if you don't know about Song of the South, it can be, it's very, I've never seen it, but apparently it's very controversial.
Racial, I remember as a kid ones. Having to learn to sing Dippity Zippity Doo-Dah.
But yeah. Here's the cool. funny thing. Yeah. So you go through the ride, has nothing to, it's just basically the Zippity Doo-Dah. It's that song. Mm-hmm. It's the characters in there. It's getting to the point where a lot of the kids, they don't reference it to Song of the South.
Yeah.
It's just Zippity Doo-Dah with Br'er Rabbit.
So literally my whole life, I've never actually seen that movie, Song of the South. I'm familiar with the Zippity Doo-Dah song.
Yeah.
I know Br'er Rabbit or
Br'er Rabbit. Br'er Rabbit.
Br'er Rabbit.
Yeah.
And the like Tar Baby and the Thorn yeah. Patch or mm-hmm. whatever. Because I read that book. Mm-hmm. I remember that from when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. But I've never seen that movie. And I had no idea that that ride was attached to that
yeah,
movie.
That's
in
basically,
any way, shape, or form, I had no idea.
That's yeah. that's basically what it is. And then when this Black Lives Matter Me Too movement hit earlier this year, like really hard, mm-hmm. Disney basically, I guess there was a lot of people who petitioned, get rid of it, get rid of it, it's bad. And it's like, I don't know. The ride has nothing to do with the movie other than it's associated with the movie. That's it. And so they decided...
If they're going to be upset about that, they should just close off Disneyland.
Exactly. And so...
Walt wasn't a good guy.
They're now updating it to Princess and the Frog.
Okay.
Which is...
Whatever.
Beyond. Yeah. I don't know, it's just beyond... It's a classic ride that everybody knows and you're... I don't know.
That is weird. Like...
Mm-hmm.
I could see why they're not going to get rid of it because it's a classic ride and people love it.
Yes.
Yeah. But at the same time, it's like if you're going to... Like if you're going to... lump that ride in as of, with all other things that are claimed to be racist or whatever, mm-hmm. then it's like renaming it doesn't actually fix it. You yeah. should tear it down. You know what I mean? And put something else there mm-hmm. that erases it from history, which is what they would like to do. I would assume they would like to get rid of the racist thing, not just rename it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like if they rename, I don't know.
Well, now it's going
to
be...
I don't yeah. even want to speculate.
Well,
they rename some now, racist organization. Like, say, for instance, they decide to rename the KKK the, I don't know, the...
HHH.
Yeah, or yeah. who knows, you know what I mean? The LLL or ZY, the YMCA, you know what I mean? Like, who knows what they want to rename it? It's like, if it's the same thing, what does renaming it do?
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah. Well, know? And that's what the thing is so basically.
And what are we talking about? A ride?
Yeah. The ride, the ride's going to be exactly the same. It's just inside, instead of it being, you know, all the Br'er Rabbit stuff, it's now going to be the Princess and the Frog mm-hmm. theme.
It's going to be the other racist thing, the Cajun in the film.
Right? And so, but
we're so unqualified to be talking about this stuff. Yeah. Just three idiots yeah. sitting in a basement.
That's what makes it so fun.
This one, I mean, I'll fight anybody blue in the face on because I just don't understand it. I don't understand how that ride was racist. I can understand how maybe the movie was.
Yeah.
I've never seen it, so I don't know, but I can. I can.
I'll take your word for
I'll,
it.
I'll take your word for it. But the ride. No, it was not in any way, shape, or form. They just want to do it because it's associated with it, and we need to get rid of every racist thing. Well,
so Br'er Rabbit and
guess we're getting rid of all part of the same movie. That has cotton.
Wow.
Just saying.
Anyways,
they just rename it.
Oh, okay.
Fluff weeds.
Yeah, something. Fluff weeds.
Yeah. This shirt's made of fluff weeds. Not racist anymore.
Right. So, yeah, I don't know. We'll see how it turns out. I've never seen Princess and the Frog, so.
I've seen
it's
it.
It's all right.
It was fine.
I watched it once.
Well, I don't think it was bad.
Yeah, no, it wasn't fine. Bad. It was okay.
Yeah. I've never had no interest in seeing it. And even my girls, they watched it like once or twice, and they just didn't even care for it after that either, so.
All right. I also watched... I also watched the movie Logan Lucky this week, ooh, which I love.
Good
that
movie.
Did you watch it on his Vudu?
So I did, but I do own that film. I have it upstairs. I own it. I've watched it multiple times, yeah. But because I was laying in my bed and I didn't want to get up to go get the Blu-ray, I was like, I bet you Zach's got that on his Vudu.
That is
so
the nice thing.
It was there.
That is the nice thing about Voodoo.
Yeah.
That's funny.
What I need is, you know how they have like those, like you can, they used to have them in cars, like the massive like 120 disc CD changer.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I need one of those like built into my walls.
Yeah.
To like just select movies.
A red box in your wall.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I need.
Yeah.
Red box. It selects it, it plays it, it puts it back. Yeah. That's what I need.
Would be nice.
Because I can't count the number of times where, like, I want to watch something that I own, but it's in the other room, so I don't want to go get it.
It's true.
Because I'm lazy.
Yeah. I'm the same way.
And then I'll, like, search for it streaming, and it's not streaming, so then I'm just like, ugh, I'll watch something else.
At least yours is in the other room.
Still not willing to go up and get it.
Mine are all downstairs, so.
Yours are all 20 feet away from you. You still don't want to get up.
Yeah, don't you watch all your movies downstairs anyway?
No. No.
I guess, I don't know, maybe my view of how you live in your house is skewed, because every time I've been there, you're in the basement.
And that's funny, because like, sometimes I'm never in the basement, so.
Sometimes when I come over, like, you're upstairs, you know, doing dishes or cleaning up or getting ready to put your girls to bed or whatever, you know what I mean? So you are upstairs, but then we immediately go to the basement.
It's true.
So.
Yeah, like, I was over there, I don't know, what, a month or so ago, and I went in and went upstairs, thinking that because no one else is home, he's going to be upstairs. And he's like, I'm down here in the basement.
That's so weird because I'm hardly ever down in the basement. Well, I got my huge collector's deluxe edition of Friday the 13th movies this week.
Nice. Mm. Did it come with a glove?
No.
Oh.
That's Freddy, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Did it come with a hockey mask?
I wish. No, but anyways, yeah, so I've been watching. I got through three of them. And I realized, even though I've seen it before, but I don't know if I ever realized, Jason is a wuss in the second movie.
Yeah. Doesn't he not even have the hockey mask until the third film?
Yeah, not until the third one. He runs around in a...
It's amazing how much I know about these movies, considering I've never seen anything other than the first one and the one in space.
Jason goes to space.
That is a horrible one.
But it has that one sweet kill where he, like, freezes... He, like, dunks that person's head in, like, the...
Yes!
The
liquid nitrogen?
Yeah, and he, like, freezes their head solid, and then he just shatters it on the counter. Cool. Pretty sick.
Does have some pretty cool
Very kills creative as far as horror movie kills go.
I find it funny in that one as well where they have a recreation room where basically...
Oh, yeah, digitally animated
digitally,
stuff.
Digitally reflects things. And so they end up creating Camp Crystal Lake. And so he goes up there and all of a sudden he sees these two girls are like, hey, you want to have a pillow fight? And he just kind of stares at them. And then it cuts. Then it does a cut scene, and it comes back, and he has both girls in a sleeping bag, and he's just banging them against the wall on the ground, swinging around his head.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's just. And then at the end, then it cuts scene again. It comes back, and he finally just tosses them to the side. Keeps
like
on walking.
I feel
like he can't kill them.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I feel like Jason is like the king of Halloween season. You know, like, he has the most movies under his belt.
Does he?
I think so.
10? There's 11 of the Halloween.
So Jason X, which is 10. And then...
I know that there was that reboot.
And then you got the reboot.
Ago. There's Jason versus Freddy.
And then Freddy versus Jason. So he technically has 12. He has one up on Mikey.
So... I don't know.
If there is 11 Halloween.
He's definitely had a lead for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Mike Myers only recently got the two Rob Zombie films and then this sequel and the one that's on the way.
Yeah.
So those are all very recent additions.
Yes.
Like, so it seems to me like when people are thinking like, I don't know. It just seems to me when people are talking like, you know, horror movie slasher villains or whatever, you know, like the iconic serial murderers or whatever, he's always like, number one on the list or whatever. King of Halloween. And I just don't see why, man. Like, I've never been drawn to be like, I've never had that urge. Like, I'm going to watch all the Friday the 13th movies. And part of it is because I know he's not in the first one.
Yeah,
because I've seen it
one.
Because I wanted to get into it at one point. So I got the first one. I watched it. And I was like, he's not even in this until the very end of the movie. And then he's like this skinny zombie kid.
And he's just a part of a dream sequence too. He's not even...
Yeah.
Technically in it.
So, is it a dream sequence or does that happen?
Yeah.
I thought it happened.
No, it's a dream sequence.
Oh, is it? Oh, yeah. She wakes
up. She wakes up in the hospital, and then they tell her that they just found her passed out in the canoe in the middle of the lake.
So, yeah, he's not even in it. And then in the next movie, he's just wearing a burlap sack
and
over
he's
his head.
A wuss. Like, there's a part where one of the guys fights him to the ground, and they're wrestling around on the ground, and can't even barely overpowers him. And it's like, man, you're a wuss, dude.
He didn't take the wrestling camp or class at Camp Crystal Lake or whatever.
Do something.
It is.
I mean, he was the kid who got bullied at Camp Crystal Lake. He wasn't good at outdoor sports.
That's true.
That's true. He was good at archery, wasn't he?
I don't know. Maybe that's just maybe they just have archery there, so that's like his go-to thing because he can get it. It's readily available.
But and then in the third one, that's when he starts becoming Jason. That's when he gets his
mask.
He's
refined his killing skills. Yes.
Anyway,
it's almost too little, too late because then. Then
you
the
lost
movies,
my interest.
Yeah, well, then the movies, then you go to number four, which is, I think it's A New Beginning. And then you got like five, six, and then there's what? There's, which one was it? I'm trying to think of. Oh, and number eight, where he goes to Brooklyn, middle of the 80s, and he's just walking around Brooklyn just killing people.
You might as well.
I think they're fun slasher movies.
Yeah,
they're in by no means. I put Halloween and Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah,
I put those before Friday the 13th in my book. Might not be the popular opinion, but
yeah,
when it comes to the three famous, then you got Chucky.
Sorry, what were you saying? What was your ranking?
So you got Mike, you got Mikey, you got Freddy, and then you got Jason, and then you got Chucky.
My ranking is the same, except I flip Jason and Chucky.
Makes
because
sense.
I like Chucky.
Yeah.
And I don't care for Jason, so I just shove him further down the list. Every time there's a new person who's like trying to join the party, he just gets bumped down. So that person, to make room for that guy. He's like the friend that's, you know, you keep him around because like, just in case your other friends can't hang out.
You can have
like,
some fun with
you'd
him.
You'd easily just, like, you bail on him to hang out with somebody else. Uh-huh. He's that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I looked them all up. Here's all the Friday the 13th movies. So there's the original, and there's part two, part three, then the final cut, or final chapter,
which is four.
Yep, then part five, A New Beginning. Then there's part six, Jason Lives. Then part seven, The New Blood. Part eight, Jason Takes Manhattan. So that's number eight you were talking about. Then there's Jason Goes to Hell.
Which that one, if I remember, was actually pretty decent. That one came around.
So that one's nine?
That one came around Freddy's New Nightmare.
Okay,
I don't know. Remember. Anyways.
Then there's Jason X, which is the one in space.
Yes.
Number 10.
Number 10.
And then Jason, and then the reboot.
And then Freddy versus Jason, the reboot.
So there's 12.
Which out of anything to make a sequel on, they should have done Freddy versus Jason. They could have easily watched another one of those movies. I love Freddy vs. Jason. I
haven't seen it.
It's a good one.
Yeah?
Yes. So is this box that you bought, is it the Crystal Lake Memories collection?
No.
Oh, okay. Oh, you know what? This is complete history of this. Is like a docuseries or something.
Yeah, just do like Friday the 13th Deluxe.
I don't actually want to see the box set. It was just there, so I clicked on it.
I thought you wanted to see it.
I don't actually care about the thing that you bought. That's interesting.
No, it's cool that you bought it. I mean, I think anytime you want to add to your personal collection, that's cool.
Yeah.
I'm all about owning physical copies of movies and stuff, so.
Yeah.
It's sweet.
Like the one I had to get cost me a pretty penny, but.
I'm a sucker for, like, when I see something and they've done, like, a cool idea with, like, the box art or something. It's not something normal, you know?
That's what this one is. So, it's a whole new box art.
Yeah.
Special edition drawings.
I already owned the movie. Have you ever seen Hudson Hawk? You know what that is?
Yes.
So it's a not very well reviewed film that Bruce Willis wrote, starred, and directed in, if I remember correctly. All the villains are named after candy bars.
Yeah.
But I really like that movie. I think it's pretty funny. And I owned it already, but then I just happened to be at that Entertain Mart store or whatever and walking by, and they had it. but it was like a new release of it.
And was it the retro case?
Yes, yeah. And it looks like a VHS tape. Uh-huh. I bought it immediately. I was like, I already own this and don't need it for any reason at all, but I want it.
See, and that's...
And so sometimes, you know how like I'll buy a movie more than once on accident, and I've given you guys copies of films because I have the same exact movie more than once, but in this case, they're both on the shelf because they're different. That's awesome. The exact same movie.
See, and that's what I loved about this collection is I open them up. So you have your little slip cover that are not the slip case, but the cover on the inside, the little paper cover.
Oh, is that what the discs go into?
No, it's just it's your normal cover thing. So okay. You have your disc that opens up and it's just the normal cover that's with the disc.
Okay.
Or whatever. Anyways, what they did on this one.
Oh, you're talking about the thing that goes around the box.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought you were talking about like when you open it.
No,
and there's like the page, like
no. This, so the okay. one that actually it's the cover that goes around the box, like around your disc box.
I got you.
Anyways, they did a special edition with all the cases, where it's the original art, and then it's new art.
Oh, that's cool.
And so it's reversible, so you can choose which one you want to display and stuff. I was like, that's actually really cool.
Yeah,
that is awesome. Is the spine different?
On some of them, yes.
Each one has its own box?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I see what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah, each one has its own. Yeah.
I've now put together in my head exactly what you have.
Okay. Yeah.
Puzzle.
Yeah, each one has its own box.
Well, first and I thought it was like just one book. Yeah, and I had all the discs in it or something.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
But that's not what it was.
No, this is a huge, 12?
Yeah, 12 discs. Movies.
Yeah, 12, 13. No, there's 13 because they have one just for bonus features and stuff. And then they actually have a 40-page little booklet.
Of course they have 13. How has that 13th film not been made yet?
Yeah. I didn't even think about that. They have 13 movies with Friday the 13th.
Mm-hmm. They only have 12.
Well, no, but the special features. But the 13th one hasn't been made because they actually had all these plans for it. Because I read this, like I said, it came with a little booklet with the history of Jason. And they talked about it in there. They had all these plans, kept getting pushed back. And then
it seems like something that'd be so easy to get made. Like, hey, we want to make the 13th Friday the 13th movie. We're going to open in theaters on Friday the 13th and home release on Friday the 13th.
Here's the funny thing. So whoever was in charge of it before, I can't remember.
It's just an excuse to print
like
money.
New Line Cinemas or whoever it was lost their rights to Jason. Here's who has rights to Jason now.
Disney.
LeBron James and his studio.
Oh.
What?
Yep.
Jeez. So it's going to be terrible if it gets remade.
And that's why nobody wants to remake it, well, because his studio has the rights to
what
it.
What have they made, though? Have they made anything?
Space Jam 2.
Yeah, but we haven't seen that.
No, but that's their first. That's the first movie they're making, as far as I know.
Huh. I refuse to pass. As you guys know, I'm hard on LeBron James. I'm not a fan, but I will wait to pass judgment on that movie until after I see it. That being said,
passing judgment right
I'm not
now.
Excited.
I was going to say, I will not wait. I will pass judgment now.
Pass judgment so hard right now.
I will do it for you. Twice.
I'm not talking about Space Jam. I'm talking about the Friday the 13th movie. I assume Space Jam 2 will be bad.
Okay, that's what I thought you were talking about.
Space Jam 1, although it has a special place in my heart because I saw it as a kid.
It's not great, but it's fun.
It's not a great movie, but it was fun. And this movie could be that for a new generation of kids. You never know.
It won't be.
It won't be. It'll just wither away in a dark corner like the current Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movies. Yes.
Yeah. Just forget about them.
I actually kind of like that most recent one because they actually have Krang from Dimension X.
I know.
And
I
Bebop and Rocksteady.
I didn't mind
How do you
it.
Not put them in the original films?
With Seamus as Bebop?
Yeah.
See, I forgot about them so much that I didn't even know they made a second one.
Yeah.
I saw the first one. I was like, meh.
I saw both of them in theaters because Falco was like huge into Ninja Turtles at the time.
Yeah.
They're not bad. That being said, could they have made better movies? Yes.
Yeah. The original, I mean, that's not what this episode is about, but the original, the first two Ninja Turtles movies, the original one and then The Secret of the Ooze, are fantastic films. They're so good.
I love Secret of the Ooze.
Yeah. And, no Bebop and Rocksteady. Instead
I was going to say, I feel like they missed that part
there.
What
are they? They're like Taka and Rezar or something like that? Toka and Rezar, maybe?
I felt like they easily missed that opportunity to do Bebop and Rocksteady at that point. Well, I don't know why they didn't, but Anyways, not the movie we're talking about tonight.
No, I want to malign some more people and their beliefs today. I watched this documentary on Netflix. This is one thing I watched. It's called Behind the Curve, about flat earthers.
Oh, no.
Dude, okay. I'm all up for a good conspiracy theory. I think it's fun. These people are... I'm sorry. I'm sorry if any of our listeners are believe in flat earth, but you're pretty stupid. So they,
feel like we're either going to lose zero listeners or all of them based off that one statement.
Exactly. Either way, I hold to it. So it starts out with this guy. He's across the bay from Seattle, and he's looking, and he goes,
last week.
if the earth were round, we wouldn't be able to see Seattle from here. And you can kind of vaguely see the Space Needle and the high-rise apartments there and stuff. And I was like, it's not that far away, and those are really tall buildings. And so then he goes off and introduces all these people, all of them really weird and just a little bit off. And like the one main guy, I think he still lives with his mom. He's like 45, 50. Hmm. Like real weird. And then it goes off through all these other people. And then they go, this main guy and this girl go to NASA in Florida. They're center or whatever, and they're looking at all this stuff and they're making fun of it and they're doing a Facebook Live thing. And so they get to this part where there's these seats, so you're kind of like leaning back in and there's a screen up above your head where you can like look at space and all this stuff. And so on the screen it says push start, so the guy's like tapping the screen. He's like, look at NASA, they're so broke, they can't afford anything, no one's here, and this thing's not working right. And he's tapping on the other screen next to him, push start. He's like, this is ridiculous. And the girl's making fun of it on their live stream. They get out of it, and the cameraman slowly pans down from where the guy was on the seat down to the console right next to him where the button says start that you're supposed to be pushing. It's telling you push start, and he can't figure out there's a button that's glowing green to push start, to start the video on this thing. And then they go into, like, where they have this outbuilding for the rocket, one of these huge rockets. And he's like, this is it. This is the building. A plain white door. Look at this rundown piece of crap. And they go in there, and there's no one there. And so they're like, the earth is flat! And it's like, screaming about all this stuff. And, like, there's no one there. So they're like, this is just so funny. And then they go off, and later they show this guy who's gets this gyroscope. A laser one that, like, the military uses and all this stuff. And he goes through and explains how the Earth is 360 degrees, and then there's 24 hours, so 360 divided by 24 equals 15. So that's, the Earth moves 15 degrees every hour. And so he says, we're going to put this gyro in, you know, get it all set up, so then if there's any movement from the Earth, it'll show how much there is. And so they set it up, they wait an hour, and he goes, oh, this is real strange. We picked up a movement 15 degrees over 1 hour. And the cameraman's just like deadpan on his face. And he's like, it's just really weird. Can't explain it. And so they're like, well, maybe the CIA, their computers are messing with this. So they put it in like a lead.
What?
Yeah. This is what the links they go to disprove around Earth. So then they put this gyro in like a lead box, a big lead one, concrete around it, all the stuff, put it in there. Wait another hour because the lead will block out any signals that the CIA has given this gyro. Still picks the movement of the Earth 15 degrees over 1 hour. And they're like, I don't know how they're doing it, but they're doing it. So then they go and they're putting it in this other one, and they didn't show them releasing that one because they were just barely putting it in at this conference or whatever that the whole thing was based around. And then they do this other test where they have these three poles set up at a certain height, and they're like, well, if the Earth is flat, we can shine this laser across at, you know, 17 feet high. It'll hit the last pole at 17 feet. And then the laser doesn't work and all this stuff. They can't prove it. And then they finally use the big flashlight to do it. And then the guy's like, oh, well, if the Earth is curved, we're going to have to lift up our light on this end or whatever to make the angle.
I was
angle.
About to just mention this part. I saw something.
Yeah.
On it. Yeah.
And then so that
totally proves himself wrong.
Yeah. Like, they've been doing it through the entire series, proving themselves wrong. So then the guy, you have to lift up the light to make it you know, reach the other end at the right angle because it's round. And they say, if it's round, we'll have to raise our light. So they raise it up even higher.
Uh-huh.
And they tell the guy on the walkie-talkie, hey, raise it up higher. We can't see it. And so they raise it up. Yeah, I'm standing on my tippy toes. I can't go any higher, but you can kind of see it. Yeah, we can see it. And then it cuts to the credits. They disprove themselves in their logic every time. It's so stupid. So, yeah, it's fun to watch because it's just, but it's also cringeworthy. Man, I can't believe people are like that, man.
Yeah. I saw a meme the other day, and it was a picture of each one of the planets.
Yeah.
And it was, so it started off with the sun mm-hmm. on the top, and then what does it go? How does it go? Is it Venus?
Yeah.
And then Mercury?
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? And then Earth?
Yeah.
And then Mars, mm-hmm. and then, yeah, so on and so forth. Anyways, so basically it starts off, and it's basically a half. It's just a small portion of each planet.
Yeah.
And it creates a half circle, and everything's all half circle, and then you get to Earth, and it's just flat. And then half circle all the way down.
It's funny to watch, but it's so sad.
It is.
And then they have, like, actual scientists on there. And one guy, when he hears about their tests, he's like, they're using a laser? That's really interesting. I want to see how it works out for him. It's a laser. Oh, they're going to have problems. Because he knows laser beam, as it gets sent out, goes wider because it's light rays. And so it doesn't stay focused. And that's what happens in there. And he's just like, yeah, it's not going to end well. It's just way funny.
But yeah. One thing I will never understand.
Yeah, it's crazy. But anyway, let's actually get on to our movie now that we're 40 minutes into this recording.
Yeah, you can maybe take 10 of that off.
Yeah, we were talking for a while
before. It was only about 5. Anyway, we're talking about The Nice Guys. We're starting buddy cop movie season, I guess. I don't know.
That's what we're doing?
I don't know. We have buddy cops listed on our board.
Actually, yes. I was going to declare buddy cop month.
Okay, so November is buddy cop month?
Yeah, yeah. My next pick was going to be a buddy cop movie. So.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yep, that's what I was going to do. I declare buddy cop month.
The unofficial, official
yes.
buddy cop month.
I'm down with it. I think that's a great idea.
So we are doing The Nice Guys. Came out 2006. It is rated R for a lot of language and a bit of nudity. And this stars Russell Crowe, Ryan Gosling.
Ryan Gosling is amazing
so
in
funny.
This movie.
So is Russell Crowe.
Yes.
Just knocks it out of the park, yes. too. And then...
Kim Basinger's in it?
Yeah. The daughter... Angerie Rice. Angerie, yeah. And then...
Matt Bomer.
Oh, yeah.
Margaret Qualley. Yaya DaCosta. Keith David. Bo Knapp.
That's really...
Yeah.
Directed by...
Shane Black?
Yeah. And
what
written
has
by...
he done?
A lot, actually. I pulled it up.
I was going to say,
so,
it sounds really familiar.
Yeah, it sounds... So... I knew he had done Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Okay.
And I knew that he had done...
That movie actually felt really familiar to Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Yeah,
in ways.
And he also is... I knew he was in partly responsible for the fourth Lethal Weapon movie. He's actually written the first one, the second one, the third one, and the fourth one. So
okay.
He wrote all the Lethal Weapon films. And he wrote a movie that is so near and dear to my heart, I didn't know that he had done it. The Last Action Hero is a Shane Black film.
Oh, okay.
And I love that movie. I think it's so good.
Yeah.
Let's see what else he's got here. I'm sure he has a bunch of directing credits. I only pulled his writer credits.
Mm-hmm.
But he also did Iron Man 3 and the Lethal Weapon TV series. He did the movie The Predator, which...
Okay.
That movie's not good.
Says you.
Yeah, that's right. Says me. let's see here. The Long Kiss Goodnight and he has a something.
Ooh,
that he's
Long Kiss Goodnight, that's a good one.
Announced called Doc Savage, but it hasn't been made yet.
Hmm.
And then another short called AWOL.
Hmm.
And the Monster Squad. That was also him.
Oh, okay. I love the Monster Squad.
So, oh, and the last Boy Scout.
Dang.
Bruce Willis, bruh.
He's knocking it out of the park.
Yeah, so he's written some good stuff.
Yeah, definitely. That explains why I love the writing so well.
When I, so I knew he had done a few things, and then when I went and pulled it, I was pretty surprised by exactly how many things he had done. So he's actually only directed 6 things. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, Iron Man 3, The Nice Guys, The Predator, and that thing that he's announced. And a TV movie called Edge.
Hmm.
I've never heard of it. So
it sounds familiar, but I don't
know. Not many directing credits, but quite a few excellent writing credits, yeah.
All right, should we jump into this?
Well, I want to go over the numbers for the movie first.
Okay.
So this movie did not perform very well.
It kind of flew under the radar, I think.
Yeah. Every person I've talked to about this movie, and I didn't see it in theaters.
Are you sure? I feel like I saw it.
No.
I know I saw it. Okay, that's what it was.
Yeah, I didn't see it in theaters. I saw it later. The first time I saw it was in my basement. And I think... I don't know. Somebody might have loaned it to me. But maybe I just bought it. Because I do own it.
Yeah.
So, anyway, it had a $50 million budget. And it opening weekend, only 11.
Whoa.
The gross from the U.S. was only 36, and worldwide it made $62 million.
Holy cow.
So not a lot of money made off of this film.
At least it made its money back.
Yeah, so which is unfortunate because...
They set it up for a potential second, which would have been fun.
They did, yeah. So, and I watched the special features for that, for that on the disc today, and in one of them, he's saying, like, I'm not saying, you know, I'm not going to say it out loud, but, you know, sequel... sequel is basically what he said. And I didn't know the numbers. I didn't know how it had performed at the time, but while we were sitting here, I was looking it up and I was just like, man, they're never going to make that sequel.
Sucks. Who was saying sequel?
Shane Black.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Dang. That's unfortunate. Cause this is so well done.
And you can tell, like, just in the interviews, everybody seemed to have a lot of fun making this film with him on set. I think you do get kind of a special thing when a writer is the director for the movie, because
he knows what the vision's supposed to be.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You really get what his vision for the film is. And in this case, it's just so much fun. You know, it's like when a character is like overly goofy, it's like, he throws in, like, make sure you do this cool thing also, so it's not too goofy. Mm-hmm. Or if it's, like, overly serious, like, make sure you, like, spit out a joke here or really drop your gun or something, you know what I mean? Like, do something goofy to balance it out. Like, he really has, like, an exact vision. Like, in one of the special features, he was literally showing Matt Bomer how to throw that girl through the window.
Oh, okay.
Like, I want you to spin and throw her. Don't just pick her up and hurl her or whatever. Yeah. You know, like, he's showing, like, this is exactly how I want it.
That's
so
cool.
It might be kind of, like, infuriating to be working with somebody with that much, like, if he's that controlling all the time. Because it definitely seemed like he was very hands-on.
But I think, like, once you start doing it, going through the motions of that and seeing it.
Well, like, it seemed like he was having a lot of, like, everyone was still having fun.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say is once you start that and everyone's on board with it and they go through the motions and you can see what he's building, I think everyone's like, oh yeah, okay. Because it turns out so well.
Yeah, and I doubt, I mean, you're not going to get actors of this caliber to sign on to a film if they don't agree with, like, the vision necessarily. Yeah. And it sounds, I didn't cross-check to see, like, who worked with him where, but it seemed like Russell Crowe and Goose had worked with him before at some point. Yeah. Like, maybe he was, like, a co-writer on something or, you know, like, he wasn't, like, in charge of another movie that they did, but he was there on set or he helped with something, you know? So they at least knew him in some way or something like that. So, but it was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they had to follow orders a little bit, though. You know who else followed orders? Hitler. I had to work that in somehow.
They do that twice in the movie.
One of my favorite lines.
Yeah, someone says that they're just following orders and they compare them to Hitler.
You know who else followed orders? Hitler.
Yeah, at the very end, when Kim Basinger says, I'm just doing my job following orders, and Goose starts going off in German.
Well, yeah, and then she goes, what is he saying?
What is wrong with him?
I think he's comparing you to Hitler right now. And then the other part where... where he's sitting there like, Munich, Munich. You know what that means? It means that's a man with no balls. And he's like, I think that's a place in Germany. Yeah. And he's like, oh, you know who had one ball? Hitler had one ball.
So I think the best thing about this movie is the chemistry between Ryan Gosling and Russell Crowe. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Hands down. Like, of all the buddy cop movies we're about to cover this month.
That you didn't know we were going to
cover. Yeah, that I didn't know we were going to be covering. I mean, off the top of my head, without thinking too hard into it, they probably have the best chemistry of it.
Oh, yeah.
They're just, I mean, if we watch A Lethal Weapon, maybe there's some rivalry there because they have multiple movies.
Yeah.
But, I mean, these guys, they just, they seem to play off each other really, really well. Because
there's,
like,
there's so much tension and but, like, friendliness with them. Like, you know, I don't know. They both get on each other's nerves. And like, mm-hmm. what are you doing, you idiot? But
and
then
Russell
they're both
just
together.
Russell Crowe just plays such a good straight man, too.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, Ryan Gosling is just, like, a barely functioning alcoholic who is moderately successful. You know what I mean? And just he's just barely getting by. Like, he's terrible at his job. Yeah. Probably because he's drunk all the time. But, I mean,
but he proves that he's not terrible at his job every time someone says he's terrible at his job.
Yeah, he lucks into figuring something out or whatever. Yeah.
Although, I do love the part where it's gearing towards the end and he has the paper. He's like,
when he goes out the airport.
You think
stuff?
That's the airport? That ain't no airport. It's apartments. Yeah. Apartment number. Dates. This and that. They drive
it's
up to the place.
Number.
Yeah, it's a flat number. They drive up to the place. Hey, we're looking for this apartment. Yeah, it's been bulldozed for 2 years.
The next scene. They used to have over numbers. Well, he's driving towards the airport.
He looks over at him and he goes, airport, airport.
Well, he makes this big speech about how he does know what he's doing.
Because his daughter calls him a failure at that point.
Says that he doesn't know what he's doing and he can't do it anymore. And he's like, yeah, see? And he makes her smile like she believes him in him again. And then he's just wrong. But she doesn't find out that he's wrong, which is pretty funny.
And then he does yell at Russell Crowe. He's like, they used to have all this stuff, and they used to not be open at night, and blah, blah, blah. And
if they don't do that, they should do it. It's a good system. I don't know why they got rid of the system.
And Russell Crowe's just like, yeah, man, I get it. It's okay. It's all right. You're right. I get it.
So I love the introduction to these characters.
Yeah.
First off, both characters. I just like... I also like the lead into the movie where it's like the kids in the class. Well, it's the lead into him, really, meeting Russell Crowe. So it shows this classroom and they're watching this like swimming safety video. And they're like, this is Jimmy or Clyde or whatever.
Let's see what they brought with them today.
He has a plain towel. This is Susie. She has a bright towel. And this is Doug. He has a gay towel.
It's a rainbow.
It's a rainbow, yeah. And the kids just in the class are all laughing, and then Russell Crowe's voiceover comes in, and he's like, kids today, they know too much. And he basically follows this girl to this place where this...
He's messing around.
Yeah, this predator essentially is like trying to get her to fool around with him, and he's giving her some weed or whatever, you know. And he waits. I like that he's just waiting. Because he knows that nothing's happening, you know, and she's going to leave or whatever. So he's just standing out there eating sunflower seeds or peanuts, and he's flicking all the shells into this guy's, like, nice car. And then as soon as she gets on her bike and leaves, he goes up to the door, just knocks. Hey, are you Fred?
No, he says, are you the man?
Oh, yeah, are you the man? What? Yeah, because he asks the girl, he's like, who's the man, baby? Who's the man?
Uh-huh.
She's like, you're the man.
Uh-huh.
That's super
so
cringy.
Weird.
You're the man. So you're my foxy fox.
Yeah. And anyway, so he's like, are you the man? And he goes, what? And he just nails him. Just hits
well,
him
he
right
has a pair of brass knuckles on and just clocks him.
Yeah. When I was watching the special features, so Shane Black had input as to exactly where on the wall he should look when he's taking the punch.
Yeah.
Like how far back he's supposed to turn his head before he falls to the ground. So that's why some of it seems like maybe a little overbearing, but it still seems like everybody.
Oh, yeah. Fun.
Yeah.
Well, and that's and I like when they finally first come around and meet each other.
Yeah.
You know, because Russell Crowe ends up getting a job that he's supposed to
track down
these two guys. And well,
Oh, no, Russell Crowe. Okay.
Yeah, he's supposed to track down these two guys because they're looking for this girl. And,
well, so she hires him and she's like, I think there's two guys that are following me, but I only have the address and description for one.
Yes. Yeah. And then what's his name?
Ryan Gosling.
Yeah, Ryan Gosling. He is basically this girl's grandma, right? Or aunt or whatever.
No. A different girl, the Misty Mountains, the lady.
That's
who,
right. Yeah. It's her aunt. That's right.
Her aunt hires him to find her.
That's right.
She's dead. You know what I mean? Because she dies at the beginning of the movie. Not really important to the plot, except for later on. It's the first thing you see in the film, so it's not really a spoiler.
Yeah.
Anyway, her aunt hires him. He's a private investigator to find her. And as we're being introduced to his character, he's talking about how, like, his job is not really that hard, and he doesn't feel great about it, you know what I mean? But he's basically taking money. Like, my favorite part of that is that he's talking to this old lady, and she's like, I can't find my husband. He's been missing for a while.
And he's like, what was his name?
Fred. And he looks over at this fireplace, and there's the urn on the mantle. It says Fred.
He's been missing since the funeral. All right, ma'am. We'll find him.
Yeah, he takes her money.
He takes her money.
He takes her money, and then, yeah, so he's been hired by this lady to find her niece, and he knows she's dead, but he takes her money, and he's actually on to something.
Yeah.
Because he starts looking for
doing his due diligence.
Yeah, he's following his leads and stuff, even though he's read in the papers this lady is dead.
Yeah.
So he goes to that bar.
Yeah.
Because he tracked the girl to there, and he wants the guy to, like, give him receipts. And I like even that when he tries to bribe the bartender. And he's like, what do you think of that? And he's folded
an origami shirt.
Yeah, an origami shirt out of, like, a $5 bill or something. And he's like, what's that? It's a shirt.
And he walks it on the table.
That's nice. You like it? I made it myself.
Well, and then he tries to break into the guy's bar. Mm-hmm. Punches the window out, cuts his wrist at the same time. Yeah. And he's like, oh, well, that's a lot of blood. That's a lot. Starts passing out, goes to an ambulance.
Jump cuts to the ambulance ride. And he's trying to, like, sit up still in the ambulance. And then, I like when he goes to break the window because he wraps his hand. And he, just, like, pulls back and he loses part of, like, it flips up part of the napkin. So he, like, stops and puts it back down to re-punch the window. Like, he's obviously never done that before. Like, you can tell he's, like...
Oh, yeah.
The way he's holding his forearm to aim his punch at the window.
Well, and then ultimately, you come to find out that they're looking for pretty much... Well, Russell Crowe's been hired from the girl who Ryan Gosling is looking for. Mm-hmm. So then Russell Crowe tracks him down. This is one of my favorite parts of the movie. Because he knocks on the door, opens it up, basically clocks him. And he was just like, I need you to stop looking for this girl. And he goes, okay, all right. And he goes, you get it? You understand? And he goes, yeah. And he tries to reach in the cookie jar and grab a gun. Russell Crowe catches him again. He goes, I don't think you're getting the picture. And he goes, no, I get the picture. I do. I promise. Starts crawling towards the gun. And then he goes, all right, I'm sorry. I get it. It's fine. I get it. And Russell Crowe walks up and goes, all right, I'm going to need you to give me your arm. Your left arm. And he goes, no. And then he ends up grabbing the left arm and he goes, now I need you to tell the doctor that there's going to be a remedial fracture in this place. And he goes, no.
And he breaks his arm.
You just hear a snap and he just screams.
Yeah. I love all the dialogue from that scene. Yeah, so I rewatched it twice upstairs when I was watching it earlier, and then I showed it to Lizzie. It's like, he does ask for him. He's like, March? Yeah? Who's asking? And then he just opens the door.
Yeah.
It's Jack Healy. I just need to ask you some questions or whatever. And he punches him immediately. Yeah. Bodies his nose. And then he's telling him, like, at first, he throws him against the wall. And he's like, man, I think you got the wrong house. Yeah. He's like, you're in the wrong place. And he grabs his ID and he's like, there's $20 in there. Take it if you want it. And he's like, I already told you I'm not here for robbing you. I got some questions. And he throws the wall. And then he's like, you're a private investigator? You can afford to live like this? Yeah. Like, he's there to beat this guy up and get info. But he's like, getting info for his own personal life. But you know?
Kinda, he's like impressed.
Yeah, Ryan Gosling has to remind him why he's there. Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah. Because when we're being introduced to Russell Crowe's character, he talks about maybe getting a license to being a private investigator. Uh-huh,
that's right.
So now that he's come across one and he sees how well he's living, he's interested in maybe becoming a private investigator. So he's like, "Yeah, aren't you here for some information or whatever?" And he's like, "Yeah, yeah, yeah." Stop following Amelia.
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
He's like, okay, fine. And he's like, get the message? Yeah, I got it.
Well, then he's like, just like,
I got another more thing. Yeah, you want to know who hired me? Yes, that's exactly what I want to know. I want to know who hired you. Glenn, with two N's, Lilith Glenn or whatever her name is. And he's just like, you just gave up your client like that? That quick? You just gave her up? I didn't give her up. What does he say? A practical revelation or something like that. And he's like, it seems to me like you just gave her up. And that's when he stands up and tries to get the gun out of the cookie jar really quick. And he sees him trying to grab it because he's like, he has to flip the lid off this cookie jar. He's reaching across the counter. So he just grabs his arm that had the gun in it and just clocks him over the back of the head, throws the gun across the room. And then he's like, I'm worried that you didn't get the message.
I got it.
All right. So you're not going to be following Amelia anymore. And then he starts crawling for it. And then even when he is like, give me your left arm, and he's telling him no, he stops before he breaks it. And he's like, did you cut yourself? And he's like, I'm dealing with an injury. What you want to tell your doctor is you have a spiral fracture on whatever.
The left remedial or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's radial too funny.
Radial fracture on the bone. Yeah,
there you go.
Oh, man, it's so funny. And then
that scream.
Just blood-curdling scream. And what's hilarious, too, is he immediately stands up and he's like, you mind if I take one of these apples? And he's just like, on the ground because his arm's broken. He's laying there in just pain, you know? And so he takes an apple and he leaves and he walks outside and Goose's daughter is walking up to the steps.
Yeah, 13-year-old daughter.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You want a Yoo-Hoo? Oh, yeah, that sounds great. I haven't had one of these in 30 years.
He chucks the apple in the bushes.
It's just so funny. Yeah. He's not even done eating it yet. Yeah. Just chucks it in the bushes. Are you friends with my dad? Oh, we're work associates. Oh, man.
Well, then they end up seeing each other later.
Right. Well, one more thing happens between there. Yeah. A
couple thugs end up
Russell
attacking him at his apartment.
Yeah. And that's there after Amelia also, which is why he goes back
to this hilarious because he's walking in with a case of Yoo-Hoo at that point.
Yeah.
It just takes one.
Right?
So he's coming home, and I just like all the interactions with the characters.
They're so good.
Because he's coming home with that case of Yoo-Hoo, and they confront him or whatever, you know what I mean, and bring him inside. So he... Did they hit him? He drops that box of Yoo-Hoo.
The black guy is talking to him, and then the white guy comes out of the shadows and knocks him over the head.
Yeah.
So, anyway, he wakes up in his apartment, and they're wanting to know information on Amelia, and he doesn't have information to give them. He's like, she hired me to do, you know, one job or whatever. What do you guys want with her? And anyway, they've been ransacking his apartment while he's been out. And they find this bag, and he's like, what's in the bag? And he's like, oh, you don't want to open that. That's a friend's bag. I'm holding it for so-and-so, but it's one of those bags that's going to, and he's like, it's going to explode when you open it. And right then he opens it,
and it's a bank bag.
He just blows blue paint all over his face. And the guy is just like, ah!
He's like, well, I told you you didn't want to do that.
He comes out of there, and he's just so pissed, and his face is all half blue.
And then he tries washing his face off with the fish water.
Dude, he looks like Mel Gibson in Braveheart.
Right? Well, then he ends up grabbing the fish and just chucks the fish at him. He's like, whoa, not the fish. What'd they do to you?
Yeah, I understand you guys got to slap me around, trash my apartment. It's part of the job. But what did you do? You came in here and you did something different. You're trying to make me eat one of my own fish?
Yeah, Now you pissed me off.
Yeah. That's when he hits that weird, he's got like a weird timer on his lights or
it's
something.
It's a light switch turns on all,
everything. Yeah, everything in the apartment at once. And that's when he dives for the gun and they take off or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's when he goes back to meet up with Gosling.
And again. Then he, and he comes to find out his girl's at his birthday party at the skate rink and walks into the bathroom. And Gosling's just in on the toilet, just sitting there because he has nothing better to do.
Smoking a cigarette, reading a magazine.
And he ends up knocking on the door and he goes, "Hey, it's, I can't remember his name.
Healy.
It's Healy. I need to talk to you for a minute." Ends up opening up the door and he has a gun and he's pointing the gun right at him. He's
all befuddled too.
And the whole time
I got a license
to carry.
Yeah, I got a license to carry. And ever since you visited me the other day, this thing hasn't left my side. He's got a cast on his arm with a duck drawn on it. Yeah.
And then he ends up having the magazine covering himself because his pants are all the way down. Yeah. And then all of a sudden he drops the cigarette. So he tries to put that out. The door's closing. And he swings that back open, which in turn comes back and hits him. And he just,
he's trying to
fumble and everything.
Smack the door open using his hand with the gun and kicking it open at the same time. And it just keeps bouncing back closed. He's trying to pull his pants up and put out his cigarette and keep the gun all aimed on him and keep the door open at the same time.
And if Russell Crowe wanted to stop him at any point, could have easily just stopped him. But he makes him think, like Gosling's got the upper hand.
Yeah.
And then he's like, "Hey, turn around. I don't need you watching this. Turn around." So he turns around and he goes, he realizes there's a mirror here and he goes, "Close your eyes."
And then he still can't get his pants up.
Yeah, he stands up and he still can't get his pants up. He's like, "Fine, turn around." And he goes, "Can I open my eyes?" "Yeah, I don't care." He turns around and
he's standing there holding the magazine over
holding the magazine over himself with the gun still pointed.
The first act of this movie where we're meeting all the characters and they're, you know, we're, the plot's just starting to generate and we understand like why they're going to be working together is pure gold. Everything about it, everything that happens is just hilarious.
Well, and
so
I,
good.
I like the scene right after that where Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling are talking, they're sitting down and then the daughter comes over and it's like, "You're the guy that beat up my dad." He's like, "Yeah, that's part of my job." "You get paid to beat people up?" And then they start going off on that.
She tries to hire him to beat up that girl.
Yeah, the annoying girl. "Could you beat up this girl, Jessica? She's so annoying." Yeah.
Well, and it even shows
a little bit. "I got $20.
it even shows how annoying she is at the very first because when the party starts, he says, you know.
He goes, "Jesus
Christ." Yeah, and she goes, "Took the Lord's name in vain." He goes, "No, I was actually happy when I said it."
"It worked for what I needed."
Yeah. So it even shows that. And he goes, "Gosh, Jessica." And then, she's trying to hire him. "How much money you got?" "I got $30. And they're talking. He goes, "Whoa, no, this conversation's over with. We ain't doing this conversation right now."
His daughter's trying to hire a hit on her teenage friend. So funny.
And then he, right after that, they ended up making a thing and he's like, $400, 2 days up front. You know what? 3 days, $600. Yeah. He's just like, "I don't have that type of money." He's like, "I can't help you."
Yeah. He basically has to overpay for his services to get him to help him because at this point,
well, they make the deal that, he gets the money no matter what, if he finds her earlier.
Right. And then he confesses that he knows where she is.
He's like, "Oh, I already know." He makes the agreement. He goes, "Well, that's good because I already know where she is. Let's go."
"I get to keep all the money even if we find her early." Yep. Oh, man. That is too funny. Every interaction they have with one another throughout the whole movie, like, it's just so funny.
Well, even when they show up at the protest, he's like, "This is Amelia's protest. This is where she is. See you later." And he goes, "Why? How do you know she's here?" "Because it's her protest."
"It's her protest group."
"It's her protest group." And he goes, "That's not telling me anything. It's her protest group. Where is she?" "Well, it's her protest group. She'll be here.
Ask one of those kids."
And he's like, "What are they going to know? It's her." And he's like, "If you say it's her protest group one more time."
That scene is so funny too because they're like, "Amelia," and nobody's saying anything. And
"We're dead."
Like, "We're dead." Yeah, we're dead. Because they're protesting the smog in the air. Uh-huh. Yeah. And so they're all laying on the ground, and then Russell Crowe goes, "What about the gas masks? Those didn't help because a lot of them were wearing gas masks."
And then all of a sudden you see one person kind of go, they get that confused look like, "Oh,
They didn't save the birds. Oh, man.
That is so funny. I like that they reference that at the end of the movie, too. It's like, darn birds.
Well, and then ultimately they're like, keep asking, and they're like, oh, her boyfriend died the other day, so she's not around. All right, who wants to take us to her boyfriend's house? $20.
Who wants to make $20?
One kid just raises his hand.
Yeah, I like they're walking around and he steps on one of the girl's hands who's holding a sign. And she goes, ow. And he's like, I thought you were dead. I think she calls him like an a-hole or something like that.
It's so funny. I love that the next, this whole show is so good.
It's just hilarious. Because
then it goes to the next scene where they're driving up to the boyfriend's house where
it's all burnt down,
and then they meet that kid riding on the bike.
He's like, hey, for $20, I'll show you guys my
dick.
Well, at first Chet's like, hey, if you're answering questions for him, they'll pay you $20.
I didn't say that.
And he's like, I'm not saying that. We're not offering everybody $20. And he goes, show you my dick for $20. The kid on the bike, and he's like, what? It's no, like, why would we want to do that?
It's like a 12-year-old kid.
Because does talking, he say, what, are you gay or something? He's like, you're the one who's offering me.
Yeah.
So it's funny because this kid is like,
my dick's huge.
He's like saying some wildly inappropriate things for a kid for to be saying to a
12-year-old,
And they're flabbergasted essentially by what he's saying, so they're trying to like tell him like, dude, you shouldn't be doing that, and also we do need some information from you.
Gives them the information. I love how they're getting ready to leave and the kid's riding off and they just say, hey kid, what?
What's the name of the movie?
I don't know. How do you like my car, big boy?
Right. Just so funny.
And then it cuts back to Gosling again. He goes, the nerve of that kid wants me to see his dick.
So that kid's name was Lance Valentine Butler.
Man, he's good.
I don't know if he's been in anything else, but
he
is funny in this.
I do have to say, I think another funny part is all the falls that Ryan Gosling takes in this movie. And jumping towards the end, the best part is where he falls off the building, and well, he gets end up getting pulled off basically. And luckily, one of the guys falls next to the pool, blood splatters. He falls into the water. For some reason, sees Richard Nixon. And Nixon, no!
Well, it's because they're talking about the guy.
Russell Crowe was telling that story from earlier in the movie where saw Richard Nixon as he was dying.
That's right. That explains it. Because then he's like, no! Starts freaking out, trying to get out of the pool as quick as he can.
Nixon's pointing the other direction.
But then he ends up meeting up with Russell Crowe, and Crowe's like, didn't I tell you to go to the roof? And he goes, yeah, I was just there. How did you get down? Please don't tell me you fell again. Yeah, man, I think I'm invincible. I don't think I can die. Because literally through the entire movie, he just takes fall after fall, and somehow he manages to just stay alive.
So good.
Well, like, so earlier, right after they meet the kid, they go to that movie,
the porn star
party, and he ends up meeting the Indian, and he's like, ooh, who are you? And she's like, I'm Pocahontas. And he's like, well, I'm a cowboy. And he's like, you know, maybe you shoot me. I can show you how good of an actor. And she goes, bang, goes, oh. And she goes, bang, bang, bang. And goes, oh, flips himself over the back of the railing, whatever. Just falls down the hill. Just rolls.
I like how he gets to the end. He's not even up all the way. And the girl's looking at him and just walks away. Like, he could have just died. She's like, whatever.
She just laughs and walks away. And then that girl who they're looking for
is there.
She ultimately is down there. And he sees her not really knowing who she is. Mm-hmm. And she peers around the corner and goes, hey, I'm not going to hurt you. I'm just looking for my gun. And she's like, what?
And it runs off. He finally gets it. Hey, I found my gun. It's okay. I've got it now.
And then he takes a little seat next to the tree. And so they find out the director for the movie is a guy. I can't remember his name. So they're looking for this girl and the director.
Sid Shattuck.
Yeah, Sid Shattuck. And then he ends up leaning up against his tree, tries to light a cigarette. He realizes there's this dead guy next to him. Whole time Russell Crowe comes out and he's like, hey, where you at? And he's calling his name, all that stuff. And Anyways, all of a sudden he realizes a dead guy next to him, and you just hear him go. Then he's like, Healy! He can barely make any noises. Yeah. Then he just kind of screams and, get down here! And all of a sudden he stands up and he's at the bottom of the hill and he looks down and he goes, how did you get down there? He's like, get down here right now!
Down here! He's acting like a little kid. Get down here now!
There's another gag during that scene where Russell Crowe gets they keep offering him a drink and he doesn't want to drink. Yeah. So he gets one and he puts it down on what he thinks is a stool, but it's actually like a contortionist.
That's right.
A painted contortionist.
So he's like, oh, I'm so sorry. And he picks the drink back up.
And he goes
like, No problem. And then he goes to like wipe off the condensation from the glass, but he doesn't want to touch their butt. Uh-huh. So he's just like, he walks away. And then later, after they come back inside, he looks over across the party and there's another person who puts their drink down and realizes it's a person. Startled. Yeah. And he just shakes his head like... Also, what kind of party is this?
Yeah. Also, I like how the whole time Russell Crowe, he's doing his job trying to find the girl, and then Ryan Gosling's just drunk chasing girls around. And so then he shows him asking questions, Russell Crowe asking questions, and goes by, and there's these mermaids in the pool with a giant window you can see.
It shows Gosling swimming after them. And then the next scene, yeah, he's
swimming after the mermaids right after Healy walks away.
Yeah, when they're at the bottom of the hill, and he's showing him the dead body, and he's like, we have to get rid of the body. There was a girl. She could place me. You know what I mean? So they pick up the body, and they throw it over a fence.
Without looking.
And they don't check what's on the other side of the fence. Crunch and it falls into another yard. It's a wedding.
Is it a wedding? Yeah, okay.
So they're eating, like, it's the table for the wedding dinner. Yeah. Because there's a lady in a... She's in her wedding dress, and it just smashes through this table, and they're screaming. They just turn and run.
Well, they glance over the fence, and they get wide-eyed, and Nelson Russell goes like, all right, it's time to go.
But they're arguing why they're carrying this body, because it's like, how did you know he was down here? Did you fall down the hill? I was looking for my gun. You fell down the hill and lost your gun, didn't you? You're a detective that can't smell, and you fell down the hill and lost your gun. You're the worst detective ever. Yeah. He's like, do you smell that? Smell what? Reefer. They're smoking weed here. No, I can't smell anything. What do you mean? You can't smell anything? Yeah, I got hit in the head a few years back and lost my sense of smell. You're a detective who doesn't have a sense of smell? You're terrible at your job. And then, so he's like, you fell down the hill. You're a disaster. What were you doing up there anyway? Well, I was in the pool. Why were you in the pool? I had to question the mermaids. So good. There's that scene where there's the dancer on the table, too, and he's like, hey, you have a better view than me. Can you see? There's a girl. She's like my height, brown hair. She has clothes on. Can you see her? And she's just like, there's a lot of people here. And the bartender's like, leave her alone.
Yeah. He's like, hey, buddy, quit asking questions. Have another drink.
And then later he walks up to another group of ladies at the party. And he's like, hi, I'm Amelia. You tell me if you see me.
I got brown hair. Yay, hi.
Yeah. The fight scene there is funny too, because the blue face guy shows back up.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the main henchman dude, the black guy, which I'm gonna look that
he's
up.
Off
I don't
of,
remember what his name is.
I can't remember his name. He's off of Next Friday and Friday. Plays Uncle.
Keith David.
Yeah, he plays the uncle to Ice Cube.
I know him, but I don't know what
his character's name is. Literally older guy.
No. All right, there you go. So. Which the other guy, his name is Blueface, I believe.
Get this. We were talking about Princess and the Frog. He's the voodoo guy. Pretty crazy. Yeah, Dr. Facilier or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
See, look, we're so good at this. We're tying it all back together, looping things back around. We don't even know. Anyway... Him and Russell Crowe cross paths at the party, and they bump into each other, and they turn to be like, oh, sorry. And then they realize who it is, and they immediately just pull their guns and start shooting at one another.
The black guy pulls a gun, and then Healy just grabs a glass immediately and chucks it out of his face.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And then they're fighting over the gun.
And it falls into the hot tub.
Yeah, it falls in the hot tub. And then, which ultimately, the older guy gets the upper hand on Healy. He starts dunking his face in the hot tub.
But he reaches
and then all of a sudden you just see a shot out the hot tub, hits him in the leg, and that was the hole in the hot tub. And then Healy comes out of the hot tub with the gun and, you know.
Tells him, I don't want to ever see you around here again. You won't.
We're going to be Michigan.
Michigan works. Yeah. He thinks about it for a second.
It's so funny because, like, Russell Crowe takes his job so seriously, and he's mm-hmm. the one that's doing the shadiest work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, not the criminals, obviously. Yeah, they're more shady. But he's just, like, all about professionalism in the workplace. Mm-hmm. And his job is beating people up. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? And Ryan Gosling is he's a PI, licensed, you know what I mean?
Just
and
drunk
he's
all the time.
A disaster at everything that he does. Oh, man. So even that part where, so his daughter follows them to the party.
Yes.
And it's funny because she when they pull up, there's like a car valet service. Mm-hmm. And she's like banging on the trunk. And the guy's like, so they like hesitant to take the keys. So they open it and she's like, see, now I'm here. You might as well take me in with you. And he just closes the trunk on her and goes to hand the keys to the valet. And he's like, I can't take your car like this.
So he has no choice but to go get her out.
There's a little white girl in there. Uh-huh. I'm not touching that vehicle. So he has to go and get her out, and then he immediately puts her in a cab to leave or whatever. And she gets out and goes into the party and is telling people that she's Amelia's sister and she's looking for her. She's trying to help track everybody down. And some girl there knows that Blueface and the older guy... Mm-hmm. Which is what I'm just going to call him now.
That's the older guy.
Doesn't have a name. An older guy are looking for her. So she brings her to the limo where Blueface is. And is like, this girl says she's Amelia's sister. And he's like, oh, really? And locks the door so she can't get out. And then
Amelia ends up showing up right in front of the car.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Saying, he opens the door to shoot her. Yeah, and that's how she gets out of the vehicle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because she slams the car door on his hand. Yeah.
Yeah, and then Ryan Gosling ends up seeing what's going on kind of, and he comes running back, and they didn't, the car guys didn't see everything. And he's like, hey man, that girl in your trunk earlier, she was in that car that just took off. And so Ryan Gosling is like, oh crap. So he goes and gets in this guy's car and they're like, hey, I think his name is like Tom or something like that. Hey, that's Tom's car.
This is quintessential Ryan Gosling's character in this movie. So he gets in this, you know.
Yeah, nice.
Fast, nice muscle car. Yeah. And he peels out to go, like, down the road. Super cool. And then he's coming, like, skidding around this corner. But the guy fires a shot at him, and he immediately loses control of the car and smashes into a trunk that's off the side of the road, like an uprooted tree or whatever. Like, he's, like, super cool, just coasting along. And then, like, one thing startles him, and he loses complete control of the car and just smashes into
it. And it hits the windshield. I'd be a little freaked out, too.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, I don't know. To me, it just seems like his character the whole movie. Yeah. Like, he's trying to seem like Mr. Cool Guy.
He just
keeps screwing it up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he never is.
And I just thought the dialogue, I think it was John is his name, the dialogue as he's still in the car, you hear a girl go, oh, that's John's car. And then you hear it says,
The
thing, what this says, I had this, the subtitles on, and all of a sudden it says, John, hey man, why are you stealing my car? And then and there's another girl go, oh, I can't believe you're stealing John's car. Part of me is like, man, who's this John guy? Like, I want to know who this John guy is, because they're all worried about him, everybody stealing his car.
And anyway, so the Blueface guy is chasing him on foot, essentially. Yeah. And this van just comes out of nowhere and just nails him. Like, well, they don't slow down at all.
The daughter is about to say, hey, there's a car coming, but Amelia stops her. So that guy gets hit.
Yeah.
It's like, man.
Basically just wrangles him.
Like,
I mean,
and they're
just
right under a streetlight. Like, they don't see him at all. They're not watching. Mm. They hit him hard.
Yeah.
And he bounces off the car, and then they slow down, and they're like, oh, you just hit a guy. Let's get out of here. And they just take off.
Gone.
Man. So then Russell Crowe shows up, puts that guy out of his misery, essentially.
70s are a wild time. You can just hit people and leave.
Right?
Fine. Hit and run. Just bounce.
Well, and that's when the cops show up, and, you know, they were like, hey, man, you've got everything you need from us. Can I just go over there and get my daughter? And he goes, hey, I'm just taking orders. I'm obeying orders. He goes, yeah, you know who else obeys orders? Hitler.
Yeah. He's got a really terrible mustache. Speaks German.
Anyway, that's when they meet...
the lady that works for Kim Cattrall.
Yeah.
Can't think of her name.
Tally.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's when they meet the Tally character.
And then Ryan Gosling immediately falls in love with her.
And then she ultimately introduces them to Amelia's mom, mm-hmm. who has put out
the hit on her.
The hit on her.
They don't know that.
They don't know that. Mm-hmm. Ultimately put out the hit on Amelia, but basically they've turned around and just hired them to go find Amelia now for more money and all that stuff. And so now they're back out trying to find Amelia again. But
yeah, this whole movie, they're just trying to track her down and they can never seem to come across her.
Well, they keep finding her and she gets away.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And then, well, then it ultimately ends up leading them to, which the thing he found at the party, it was that little thing that they thought was going to be the hotel or the
film,
the apartments. And then ends up leading to the airport hotel. And I love how they go get in the elevator. And they go up the elevator, the door opens, and there's a guy, he's like grasping for air, starts bleeding out his neck. Oh, yeah, that's
because they find out about John Boy is coming to town.
Yes.
And he's like this he's a hitman for hire. Yeah.
Yeah.
The guy you call when nobody else can get the job done. You bring him in, and he gets it done. And they're worried that he's going to kill Amelia, and she's at this apartments or whatever by the airport. And I love the scene where they go to...
I like it right before that, where they go to the elevator. They interview... the bartender guy, and they go, "Hey man, have you seen this girl?" I was like, "I don't know. A lot of people come through here." Like, yeah, that's why we're asking you.
Yeah, it says, "Have you seen this girl? She's got dark hair. Her name is Amelia. What's in it for me?"
Yeah,
that's his immediate response.
He's trying He'll to get stop a doing out it. Of him.
Doing what? And then Healy just grabs the bartender, and smacks his head into the bar,
grabs his tie, and yanks it straight.
That's
down.
Right.
Yeah. We can either do this the easy way or this is the easy way. Fine. She just went up there.
And then he's like, "Did you see a girl get into the elevator?" "Yeah, I saw it. You witnessed it?" "No, an old wise man told me about it." "Yeah, I witnessed it."
Well, then they finally
get after that. And then he's like, "Right after that, one of your colleagues came through and was asking me about it. He's up there right now," or whatever. And that's why they know.
That's right.
They almost just leave.
Yeah.
And they're like, "No, we can't do that. We got to go up there."
And then that's when they go up and they open an elevator and guy's bleeding out his neck. And they turn around and look down the hall. There's a couple people fighting, and they like, "Oh," and they back out, and they go back down. And as they're going back down, you see a guy falling out the window. And then that's like it.
Yeah.
So they see that guy die, and Ryan Gosling like is like smacking the button on the elevator, like just like hammering the button. Just. And they're standing in there, and Healy seems like, I mean, wasn't ready to see that, so shaking a little bit. But you can physically see Ryan Gosling's character is shaking in fear. Like, he doesn't want anything to do with that murder that's going on. And then a guy falls past the elevator as they're going down. So they get out and go to get in their car. And Amelia... They start to leave.
Well,
Amelia lands on the car.
Well, they start to leave, and they hear the cops.
Right.
And they're like, "Oh, here come the cops." So they... book it out of the garage, see the cops, go down an alleyway, and all of a sudden he's like, "Man, she's dead. I know she's dead. We just have to figure it out because she's dead." And all of a sudden they hear bump, and they look up, and Amelia starts walking down the car, and they're just look at each other, look
she
at her.
Looks at them, and she tries to pull a gun out to shoot, and she loses her balance and falls and knocks herself out.
And then they end up taking her home, and she realizes that they're just good guys trying to help her out, and still tries to escape on him again.
So then they go
back. Well, that's because John Boy gets to the house.
Well, so what they did is they ended up going to get money from, what's her name? What they thought was money. It was a payoff.
Yeah, but she wasn't trying to escape from them. She's trying to get away from John Boy.
Well, yeah.
She knows what's going on.
Yeah, but they go to get the money from, what's her name?
The mom, Kim Cattrall's character.
Yeah, and then they realize it's a double cross because...
Ryan Gosling falls asleep driving the car.
Dude, he wakes up and he's like, "Man, I just wish I didn't have to drive this car anymore." And Russell Crowe's like, "You don't have to, man. Just let go of the steering wheel. Let go of the wheel.
Cruise control.
Yeah.
Cruise control, man.
Just takes care of itself." Yeah. "Man, why didn't I know this?" And all of a sudden there's a big old bee right in the back.
No, but before that he goes, "Hey, check it out." Russell Crowe pulls up his pant leg and there's a gun.
Oh, that's right.
He's like, "Oh, that's so cool."
Yeah. "You carry an ankle gun? That's awesome."
And then, they talk about the cruise control, and then there's a bee.
Yeah.
Then, a giant bee giant smoking bee. A cigarette.
And yeah. then Russell Crowe calls him Bumble. Mm-hmm. Hey, Bumble.
Yeah, what does he say? Bumble makes some sort of joke, and I remember what it is.
I can't remember what it is.
Pretty then. Funny, and then he's like, shut up, Bumble. And then they smash into it.
Pretty much all of a sudden you see, what's his name, Healy next to him. He's like, wake up, start screaming, wake up. And then it cuts back and you realize that he's just been asleep. Yeah. Just fell asleep right away. Smashes into a
bunch of those like water barrels. Uh-huh. Yeah, on the freeway. And the briefcase is just in the back seat, so it goes flying out of the car and smacks into the freeway and it pops open. And just like newspaper clippings or whatever is in it starts falling everywhere. At which point they realize that they're on a wild goose chase. They need to get back home.
They've been double crossed, because they know John Boy's going back to the house.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's funny because they're expecting like a doctor to show up to check on Amelia.
Yeah, because they let the mom know and they say that they're going to send the family physician. Doctor.
Yeah.
And anyway, John Boy shows up dressed like the family physician essentially to check on these kids or whatnot. And it's funny because essentially Amelia fights him off and tells him to like leave the house initially, and then he goes outside to get a better gun. And while he's out there, they pull up and they have kind of like a friendly like little wave with the guy who's like walking away from their house.
Because they hear him throw the girl out of the window and they go, did you hear that? And then they go, hey, did you hear that? Yeah, that was me. I threw the girl out the window as he's opening the trunk to his car.
Get a way bigger gun, yeah. And then this crazy shootout happens where it's like, that's hilarious because they're trying to get like the gun out of the cookie jar and like throws it out the window. Yeah. And
it's like, hey, gun. And he tosses in the gun that goes right out the window and all of a sudden.
Russell Crowe's face.
Gosling's like, shit. Russell Crowe's just sitting there staring at him with his arms open like, are you kidding me right now?
Oh, it's so good.
No, back at the diner when they were at the bowling alley, when Holly, the girl, is like, you're the guy who beat up my dad. And he goes, hey, no, sucker punched your dad. Big difference. <Yeah. laughs> That's what he says. That's the joke.
Yeah. But then, that huge shootout and you know, just goes out crazy. Mm-hmm. And then eventually you hear the cops in the background.
Yeah,
so that's when John Boy takes off. And then at the same time, and
Amelia had just jumped out the window and ran down the hill.
Because she was trying to get away from John Boy as well. Mm-hmm. And then one thing leads to another, and John Boy's driving down the road. Amelia pops out. She goes, hey, I need you to get me out of here. And he goes, oh, this just worked out great.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you hear pop, and Amelia, he ends up killing Amelia, and she falls over dead on the road. But, and then after that, it's pretty much.
Then they actually find out the real plot point, what had been going on the whole time.
Basically, there was this movie that they made that was an experimental. It's an experimental movie. It's a porno.
Why are you so fixed on that?
It's just experimental. We were trying to do this and that, and experimental. It's experimental porno.
So funny.
Oh. But ultimately, there's this film that now is being spliced into this huge auto convention. So that
But all the character names are real-life people. So they're named after the senator and the
payoffs.
Yeah, all the bribes and the payoffs and everything are written in there. The characters are named after, like, her mom and the senators involved.
Yeah,
and
it's supposed to just, this video is supposed to just unravel this huge
plot. Because basically what it is the car companies don't want to put the catalytic converters into the vehicles to make them run more cleanly or whatever.
Efficient. Yeah.
So that they're stop polluting the air, which is what's killing all the birds with the smog and stuff. Yeah. So that's basically the overarching plot, is that there's this government cover-up, and her mom is the
director of justice.
Yeah, or something. She's in charge of this case.
Or Department of Justice, but she's the head of the department.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she's basically going to let them off the hook, the people who are responsible for this, because they're paying her. And so this, it's way crazy out of hand. And there's this big auto show that's coming to town. And so they're going to, they've got one of the projectionists. They've hired him to splice their film into the tape that they're supposed to be playing that shows off all the different cars.
What's his bucket from earlier? The kid. Chet.
Chet. Yeah.
freaking shit.
Yeah, the kid from the protest. Yeah. Uh-huh. And anyway, so he's going to play the video and everyone's going to see it at this auto show thing and embarrass everybody, essentially. Yes. So they get there and they're trying to track down Chet so that they can get their hands on this videotape or whatever. Mm-hmm. But the villains are also there trying to stop them from airing this videotape. And that's when they come across John Boy again. And there's probably the best shootout slash chase in the whole movie takes place here at this point.
Well, and there was a hilarious scene right before that where they find out the things up in the projector room. And so they go up in the projector room to try to find the video so they can, they didn't know it was spliced in at the time. So they're trying to find the video so they can put it in the projector. Mm-hmm. And then what's her name?
Tally.
Yeah, yeah. Tally ends up walking in on him and points the gun at him. And Gosling's like kind of offended at this point because he's like, he's just in love with her. This? Yeah. And
he still
all
doesn't
of a sudden,
understand that she's in on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she was the one who gave him the briefcase full of money.
And pointing the gun at them.
and that's what Russell Crowe keeps trying to point out to him. Like, she's pointing the gun at us and all this stuff.
Well, she's like, put down your guns, so they have to drop their guns. Mm-hmm. And then he, once he realizes it, dives onto the floor.
Yeah, also dives to the floor and goes for his ankles.
Russell Crowe's ankles, yeah. Patting all up and down his leg.
Where is it? And he goes, where is what? The gun! The gun on your ankle. And he goes, what are you talking about? And he goes,
when we were in the car, you said, you showed it to me. You had an ankle gun.
And there was
we
a giant the car bee.
When you were asleep?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You dreamt it.
I
did dream it.
I dreamed that.
then he thinks about it. And he goes, no, I didn't. He takes like 5 seconds. He goes, yeah, I did dream that.
But like right before that, Talia is pointing the gun at him, and Ryan Gosling's like noses her hair is now in a giant afro. He's like, "How do you make it so so poofy, so big?" And just not even paying attention to what's really going on.
Well,
and then the daughter
comes into the room,
sees what happens.
So she goes into the room with the cart to throw like hot coffee on her, but it's cold.
Yeah, it's
been sitting out in the hall for hours.
Which, and the best part is she goes, I just thought it would work. And Ryan Gosling's like, good thinking, baby. It's okay. That was good thinking.
Good initiative.
And then she ends up slipping on the coffee, falls face forward, and ends up knocking herself out.
Yeah,
and,
Talia does, yeah.
And Talia does. And then all of a sudden, Healy, he's like, wow, that actually did work out really well. And then it shows Gosling. They're like, hurry, go, you know, we need to do this and this. And it shows Gosling here and grabs a pillow, lifts up her head, puts a pillow underneath her head.
Oh, man. I would love for them to make a sequel and they're dating.
Right?
That would be hilarious. Oh, man. Like, Tally's the new mom. You
that
know?
Would be hilarious.
Anyway, so... They at this point, they figure out what's going on with the film. So they're trying to get the film and get it out of there because it's evidence.
Yeah.
And John Boy is there, and they're trying to track them all down, and they're getting separated. And the old guy is taking – the old guy catches up with Gosling and has his daughter. And so he takes him up to the roof because he's going to shoot them and leave them on the roof, essentially. And I don't remember – what exactly happens? How does he get the daughter away from
He's
him?
He's crying and stuff.
He
and
fakes drunk.
Yeah.
Yeah, and has that emotional breakdown up on the roof.
And then he says, and just duck. And she goes, what? Duck. And so then he smashes him with, I don't remember what it was, something, hits him over the head with something. There's a little fight.
Oh, okay. I thought that he hit him with the reel. Isn't that what? Oh, no, because he doesn't have it yet.
No, he just hit him with something, and then a little fight ensues, and then Gosling ends up shooting him in the chest like 3 times.
Yeah, and that's then when they go over the roof.
Yeah, and then
together.
As he's falling backwards, he grabs Gosling, and they go over the roof together. And then
they fall, and he hits the pavement, and Gosling lands on the pool, and that's where he sees Richard Nixon.
Yeah, and then
I tried to look up the quote for that, but they didn't have it. Like the Richard Nixon story?
Yeah, it's because the greatest lie. That was told to him that he ever saw was Richard Nixon telling this kid who just got in a car crash or whatever that he was going to be okay. And then Russell Crowe says it's all based on your perspective because this guy sees the president or former president and he's telling him he's going to be okay and that's so amazing and great. And then he dies and goes off to wherever. And then Richard Nixon, he's lying to him and mm-hmm. feels terrible about. So it's all perspective, and it's what he was trying to get through to Ryan Gosling the whole time. Yeah. So that's why Nixon's there. Yeah.
And then he sees him in the pool, and he just does that same reaction. No, no.
Swims away from Nixon.
Yeah, and then that's when, you know, like I said earlier, walks up to Crow. Did you? I thought I sent you up to the roof. Well, I was up there. How'd you get down? Did you fall again? So yes, good. I think I'm invincible. I don't think I can die. And then he ends up getting in the fight with John Boy going after the real. And he dies.
So funny when he dives behind that car and it's on the rotating platform. So he's hiding behind the car and he's like reloading his gun. And then by the time he gets up to aim and he turns back across the car, it's turned all the way around facing the wrong direction. Yeah. So his back is pointed towards John Boy, but he gets bailed out because Russell Crowe comes around the corner. Yeah.
Well,
so funny.
And then they're running around trying to get the reel. And so Gosling sees it. And it's rolling, and he does a dive for it, and he ends up smashing through a window, hitting the ground, and then he does another dive for it, smashes through a whole nother window thing, ends up landing on top of a car. I'm dying by this point, because he just falls through everything. And it does. He doesn't get hurt at all.
Ends up getting the reel at the end. So good.
Oh, man. Everybody, people just need to watch this movie. If you've heard even the slightest little thing about it and it's piqued your interest at all, if you're a Crow fan or a Goose fan, you should just check this movie out. If you're really a fan so of good.
Excellent directing, excellent writing, excellent acting.
Hilarious comedy.
If you like buddy cop movies, this is near the top, in my opinion. Absolutely. It's really good.
And I like throughout the whole film, after Ryan Gosling has a cast on his hand, he cuts the sleeves of all of his jackets. So
he buys that brand new suit and then he cuts the sleeve on it with scissors. So he can fit his
cast through it. It's so ridiculous. It's awesome.
So, and then the worst part is still at the end of the movie, they meet up with each other at a bar and now they're buddies together. They have PIs together, the nice guys. And they're talking about the thing, and they're like, yeah, the case ended up getting dropped. Nothing happened. Nobody got arrested. Mm-hmm. So the whole movie, the whole subplot was all for nothing whatsoever.
Yeah. Well, they ended up doing their job and turning in the evidence and stuff like they were supposed to. Just the conspiracy that's going on, somebody's going to get paid off, that they're going to get away with it. They got away.
Yeah, they end up getting away with it. And he's like, well, maybe we'll catch him next time.
Yeah. That's when he's like, to the birds, hallelujah.
Yeah. I like how they show the picture of their little flyer, and it's both of them, and then Russell Crowe is, I don't know, drawn like a Puerto Rican.
I don't know why you look like a Puerto Rican, and then Russell Crowe's like, yeah, I kind of look like a Mexican.
Yeah. it's so good.
Yeah, I love this movie. I think it's great. Mm-hmm. Like, the first time I saw it, I couldn't believe that it had taken me so long to get around to it. I liked it so much.
Yeah, it's fabulous.
See, and I remember seeing the previews for this one, and I thought, I've got to see this one in theaters.
Yeah.
This was a must. I was like, I've got to. Just looked absolutely hilarious.
It was originally supposed to be a TV series.
I was just going to say that.
Oh.
But they retooled it because they couldn't get the ball rolling on it. Nobody would fund it.
Well, I am glad that it was a movie. I don't know how much I would have liked it if it was a TV series.
And then also during March's opening monologue about the downturn of society, there's a porn theater in the background, and it's playing Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which is the director's other movie that he did.
I think it actually says, I saw the same note. It says Bang Bang Kiss Kiss.
Oh, yeah, Bang Bang, yeah.
Yeah, because it's an adult theater, so it's playing a porn title. But, yeah, it is. Yeah, you're right. It's a nod to his other movie, for sure. Russell Crowe put on, it says here, some extra weight for the role of Jack Healy. Dude, he was pretty big in this
movie. I was going to say, some extra weight.
He was down in those donuts.
Funny thing is you didn't think he looked kind of off in this movie. Not horrible, but you can tell he's kind of let himself slip a little bit. Go watch Unhinged.
Yeah.
You want to see let himself slip. Whew.
Yeah, he looked big in that one,
too. Yeah, he is big in that one. And I don't know if it's just how he is or if he had to do that for the part or what, but he just.
Yeah.
Movie was great, but he just didn't look good.
Can't always be the gladiator.
Well, you know, it even could have been for the part, because in the part, his role is a guy down on his dumps. His wife has cheated on him, divorced him. He lost everything. He lost his job.
She cheated on him with his dad.
Yeah.
That was in this movie.
He's talking about
Unhinged. I was talking about Unhinged. Because I was just saying,
I do like that scene, though, where she goes, I'm seeing your dad.
It's the word of the day. I can't remember what it is. And then he's like, he took
equanimity or something.
Yeah, he's like, he took the breakup with equanimity.
Her betrayal, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Then it cuts off, and they're just eating. And he goes, I'm sleeping with your dad. She spits water everywhere, and she just continues to eat her food. Like nothing happened.
I'm sorry. What was that? I guess while he was promoting The Loudest Voice on the Howard Stern Show, Russell Crowe said that this is one of two films that he wishes there had been a sequel for, because he really liked playing the character.
Yeah.
The other film was L.A. Confidential.
Huh.
Man, I say just do it.
Yeah. He's got enough money. He could help produce this. And this film is based in the 1970s. Opens with the 70s Warner Brothers logo.
Hmm. Oh, yeah. I noticed that, too.
Yeah.
I really like the 70s setting of this film.
Yeah, it's all so good.
The colors and everything are really cool.
I really like the suits. There are some sick suits in this.
Yeah.
I think this is personally just one of the best Ryan Gosling movies I've seen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't know if I have a whole lot of trivia for this, but...
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm just scrolling through, like, some other stuff about it, and a lot of it's like, this is what car he drove in the movie and stuff. Yeah. It's not...
So, the body of Sid Shattuck was played by Robert Downey Jr. That's why he looked familiar. I couldn't place it.
The hat is awesome, wearing a fake beard.
Hmm.
Which is a shout out to Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Mm-hmm.
That is awesome.
And Iron Man.
Yeah, touche. Yeah, Iron Man 3. Well, this is kind of cool. The take with Ryan Gosling sitting against the tree next to the body of Sid Shattuck is a homage to Lou Costello, who specialized in long takes where something such as the mummy or Frankenstein's monster scared him so badly he couldn't make a sound but eventually managed to yell his partner's name.
Hmm.
Kind of neat.
Interesting.
So, see, like, some of the stuff I'm looking through, like inaccuracies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And some of the stuff, it's just, like, people just got to learn to let it go.
Yeah, nitpicky stuff.
Yeah, like, this first thing here is just Holland March yells for somebody to call 911, mm-hmm. but it was 1977 or 78 during the film.
Oh,
then 911. 911 was an emergency system used as early as 1968 in Alabama. It wasn't formally introduced to LA until 84.
Yeah.
So it's like, who cares, man? The movie's out now, and you want people to be able to relate to it, you know?
Here's another one. The phone number advertised in front of the comedy club shows that area code 323, which was not released into Los Angeles area until 1998.
Yeah.
See, it's funny, though, that the comedy place right there is actually a Comedy Store. That's its name.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's
okay.
It's been around for, I don't know, 70 years or something. It used to be a mob restaurant, and they killed people in the back and stuff.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I don't know about you guys, but I feel like this movie is...
Excellent!
Absolutely.
Yeah? Gets a button push?
Yes.
Yes? Sweet, because I already pushed it. Cool.
All right. Well, follow us on Instagram. We are at Excellent Movie Adventures. And then you can send us an email, excellentmovieadventures@gmail.com. You can follow Pickle or Zach on Instagram.
But it has to be or. You can't follow both.
No. Let's be honest here.
Follow me. I'm nicer.
I'm nice.
Took you a minute.
Anyway, I'm at Pix Adventures on Twitter and Instagram.
I'm at Z Van Beekum.
Oh, yeah. And then we are on Twitter at Excellent Movie Pod. We update that every week. I don't pay a lot of attention to Twitter. I probably should.
Cool, cool. Well, I guess we'll see you guys next week for more Buddy Cops.
Woo-hoo!
Maybe send us an email and
request your Buddy Cop.
Request
movie.
A Buddy Cop. We might get it in just in time before the end of the month.
Yeah. You've only got 2 weeks. Well, Yeah, 2 weeks by the time this comes out.
Yeah. But still, that's 2 weeks they got for us to review one. Yeah,
if you request it, we'll watch it.
Yep. We sure, well, we'll vote on it. Yeah. But we most likely will watch it.
All right. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Ciao.
Excellent.